Welcome, gals, pals, and gentle dems, to another edition of Can I Keep You? The official podcast of the unofficial Devon Sawa Appreciation Society. I am Allie, one of your hosts, and joining me as always today is the ever-lovely co-host.
Hi, I'm Lan.
Just before we jump into the actual topic at hand today, I wanted to give a little shout-out to Neil's Weather Report, which is run by a fellow that I went to school with, basically from fifth grade onwards. He reached out, he took a listen to the podcast, and he just said some nice things, and I wanted to give him a quick shout-out with his full permission, just to say thanks so much for listening and keeping awesome.
I ran into someone I went to high school with. He's like, yeah, you know, I've listened to a couple episodes of your podcast because, you know, Devon Sawa. And I was like, ah! I'm doing like a big, like blushing, excited face. I realize it's not a visual medium, but I'm a very physically expressive person.
None of you can see our faces, but we're both like smiling a lot because we love compliments and we love feedback and we want to hear that people are listening because that's awesome. Like, we do this because it's fun, but at the same time, it's super rad and validating to like know that we're not just screaming into the podcast void.
And that, no offense, Dad, more than just Lan's dad is listening to it.
But we do appreciate you, Mr. Lan's dad. But we have a thrilling episode for you today. We are returning to the subject matter of the podcast, and we are taking you back to the turn of the millennium for a chitty chat about some very apparently now classic horror films.
Oh my gosh, that's weird to hear.
Yep, don't love that. Don't love that for us.
My dad, my sister, and I play Wordle and Framed every day. Framed is like you get one frame from a movie and then you guess or skip. Halloween 2 was it the other day. My dad was just like, had to Google Jamie Lee Curtis in a hospital gown because I really haven't seen any slashers except for the first Scream, if that counts. And my sister and I, who are like very big Scream fans, are like, yeah, that counts. And like, as you're saying with those horrifying words, it's probably just like straight up classic horror to kids these days.
Well, Scream came out in what, 96?
96, I think, yeah.
And I have to do a shout out to a favorite creator of mine, whose shirt I am currently wearing. Super Yaki designed a really great series of Halloween shirts, and one of them is Scream is Billy and Stu. The sweater I'm currently wearing is Justice for Jennifer's Body. This isn't a sponsored content bit. I just happen to love Super Yaki's work and really want the pink version of that shirt because I'm like, no, they totally boned. This is giving me heavy boning vibes. Mm-hmm.
Stu loved him.
Mm-hmm. It may not have been entirely mutual, but
it didn't seem like a equal power dynamic.
Oh no, it was a very classic folie à deux.
Yeah. Though we're not here to talk about the classic slasher film.
No, though we will eventually get Skeet Ulrich and Matthew Lillard as teen idols at some point.
I'm Brock Hudson!
Today we are talking about some different horror films. We are talking about from, you know, Devon Sawa got his start in Casper, which was like macabre children's. We've talked about it. Go back, listen to that episode. Returning to the genre of slightly unsettling things. In 1999, Devon Sawa starred in a little movie called Idle Hands, where he was supported by Seth Green and Eldon Henson, who I feel like I shouldn't have to tell you who Seth Green is. He was in Du Jour, one of the greatest fake bands of all time. And Eldon Henson recently played Foggy Nelson on the Daredevil series, but was also one half of the Bash Brothers in the Mighty Ducks.
And was Jesse from She's All That, Rachel Lee Cook's best friend.
And of course, the ever-lovely Jessica Alba as the female lead slash object of the desire of Devon's character, who at the start of the film begins as kind of an inept stoner.
Yeah. And so the film, he's kind of an inept stoner that accomplished some stuff.
Right. Though I do say there is the one clever bit that I, as an asthmatic, don't generally approve of, which was the little detail of him hiding his weed in his inhaler.
It's so smart, though.
It is so clever.
Well, those cops are really dumb because it would reek
Yeah.
It would reek like marijuana.
It would, yeah. So that's where we're starting with today. And we will get to the second turn of the millennium horror film a little bit later on. So when did you come across Idle Hands? How were you introduced to this film? Because I can't imagine it being Mr. Land's dad approved.
Well, maybe. I feel like my dad just wasn't into slashers.
I just meant because of the satanic hand.
Oh, well, I think he's the one who showed me Rosemary's Baby, so who can say? I think it's more that it's a stoner comedy that he wouldn't have watched it.
That's fair.
I honestly can't remember how I first saw it. I only watched it like maybe the one time. And then when my partner and I started dating, he loved that movie. We watched it and I was like, I forgot how funny this movie is and ridiculous and the cast. And then we watched it every Halloween. Then we had a kid and didn't watch it as much. So it was really nice. We both sat down and rewatched it for this.
That's so fun.
And I just have to say, Bones is a great name for a white cat.
It's a great name.
So how did you come across this teen black comedy?
I saw the poster in the video store.
Mm.
And I was like, there are so many things about this that I like. I like Jessica Alba. Because I'm trying to think of when Dark Angel came out, if that was 98 or 99. Because Jessica Alba was kind of everywhere, like around that time. She was like a big it girl, next new thing or whatever. And I just thought she was so cool. And it had Devon Saw. I was like, oh my god, it's Casper. Yay! This is amazing! I was looking for scary movies at that time. I was going through a phase for like sleepovers. But I think I'm pretty sure I watched that one by myself and laughed myself into tears, but then was like, equal parts like horrified by some of the, like, it was a very like campy style of gore.
Yes, very much so. Like the person gets their head smashed up beside a window and then they get pulled away and then there's just a blood splatter.
Or like for most of the movie, Eldon, this is full of spoiler alerts. Like we are a walking talking spoiler alerts. This movie came out in 1999. People who were born in 1999 are very legal now. They're over the age of drinking in all countries, I'm pretty sure. Oh my god. But like for most of the movies, Seth Green and Eldon Henson are zombies. And one of them has like a, is it Seth Green who has the bottle in his head?
Yeah.
Seth Green's got a bottle in his head and Eldon Henson's head is taped on with duct tape, like actual duct tape.
He uses like a barbecue fork or something to like stick
as a support.
He tries eating a burrito, which like seeps out and is so gross.
So horrible.
Seth Green's so funny in that because he just keeps being like, oh, that's disgusting. No, we can't do that.
And meanwhile, he's got a bottle in his head and nobody really notices because it's like, it's Halloween.
Yeah.
So everybody, a lot of the things that happen to these characters get just brushed off as it just being like Halloween.
The parents just set up the Halloween decorations and it was only two nights before Halloween. I feel like that is weird. Like there was a lot. Like they had candy corn lights and stuff like that. Are you telling me you just did that like a couple days before Halloween?
You didn't have this sorted out in advance when some of us get ready for Halloween at like September 25th, if we can wait that long.
It's autumn! Halloween!
Right. I need the serotonin. Put the decorations out! I don't even really know how to describe it because it's not like necessarily a hero story. Because Devon Sawa's character isn't a hero. He's just really trying super hard to clean up the mess that he himself made by unleashing his demonic hand upon the world.
Yeah. Vivica A. Fox plays like a hand hunter. I don't know. She's been chasing this hand from person to person and she finds a guy and his hand is just like a mummy's hand. Like it's been sucked of the juice and I totally forgot about gross. That. And he's just sitting looking like shell-shocked in the like jail cell. And then his hand is just like...
Oh. Yeah, she's like a demon slayer.
Anton trying to cut his hand off with a bagel slicer. He never gets old.
Or like, I'm Leatherface. with an electric carving knife plugged into the wall. But it's just, it's so wonderfully balances that comedy and the horror of it, because the horror bits are horrible. Like the burrito thing, because he has his head cut off. Or at one point, there's a girl who gets pulled into a fan over the head school first. Head first, and she just becomes like a woman in a blender.
And Jessica Alba has a great reaction shot because she's standing under her and she's just like, ah! And then just runs. And I'm like, yeah, that's what you do. You don't wait around. Your friend is mush. Run.
Yeah, this is how you survive. And then, like, the Offspring are there at the school dance, which is such a 1999. Like, this movie is very, very much a 1999 movie.
I was saying to Scott, like, there's one picture in the publicity photos for this where they're all, like, reaching in front of them. And it's got Jessica Alba and Vivica Fox, Seth Green and Eldon Hansen and Devon Sawa. And they're all doing that. And I was looking at it and I was like, this is such a vibe. Like the soundtrack, all of the publicity photos, the cover of it, like the poster and everything. It's just so Y2K. Like, mm-hmm. Not like the futurism glitter,
no.
That kind of thing. Like, it's definitely a time capsule of culture at that moment.
You're going to watch this in your blow-up chair on your combination VCR/TV, which may or may not be the Disney Princess one or the Mickey Mouse one, depending on what your vibe is or if you had that kind of money. You are going to be wearing chunky black platform shoes and probably a tank top over a baby tee. While you do this with like for some reason the bottom edge of the tank top is like wiggly, like a scalloped thing that they've done with the serger. This is very, very specific. I'm getting very specific now.
Shirts like that are in stores right now.
I know they're back. The tattoo necklace.
Yeah, little baby tees with that weird rib, like ruffly stitched edge, like you're saying, with like the ribbed fabric and then this tiny little embroidered dragon on it.
Or like a sunflower.
I swear to God, my friend had that shirt and I saw it in a store this year.
And if you're trying to be cool, if you're not super mainstream and you don't have the like Britney Spears bangs so that you can do the baby one more time pigtails with the braids, which is also around the same era, like we had a lot of stuff. We had Christina, we had Britney, we had Backstreet Boys, we had NSYNC, we had movies like this, we had She's All That. But you probably had a razored haircut or some kind of bob, because that was also the style at a time. And like Jessica Alba's haircut in this film,
that like short with like the little flipped bottom,
yep, which you got by like getting a razor cut, like which is super bad for your hair. Or it was super bad for my hair, and I tried so hard for so many years to like have that like cool Jessica Alba, like Mandy Moore short dark hair that was like messy and piecey. But I have ADHD, so maintaining that shit every day was not gonna happen. Mm-hmm. P.S. Never cut your own bangs.
I can't remember what the whole thing was, but it's like before you cut your own bangs, go through the like bangs checklist, and it's like, B, did you just go through a breakup? It's not time to cut your bangs. A, is alcohol involved? N, is it nighttime? Are you standing in front of your mirror at 2 in the morning? Then don't do it. If anybody knows what the rest of the letters are,
please let us know what G and S are for the like banged intervention. Also, like if you have a widow's peak, no, it doesn't work for us.
I was thinking of getting bangs when I went to my barber, but
you have a cute situation going on. It's like very soft pink.
Well, it's so funny because you have mentioned millennial pink.
Oh, yes.
And I would just sit there and be like, I don't know what that is. And I finally looked it up the other day and I was like, oh, that color that my hair and my headphones and my brush and my notebook and one of my scrunchies, the roses on my cat.
It's like a really soft pink. And there's something to be said, like if you weren't, like if you were like a ew pink kind of person back in the day, you're reclaiming millennial pink for yourself by being like, it's okay to like pink. It's fine. You can like pink if you like pink. Nobody's gonna judge you. You don't have to be like, I'm not like other girls.
I feel like I almost went through a phase of like, I don't like pink. That just like did not last. Like I loved hot pink, specifically hot pink leopard print. I had a hot pink leopard print dress once in high school. I don't think I would still fit it, but I kind of wish I still had it.
It sounds like something you buy at like LA Express in the pre-Suzy Shear days.
I bought it at Value Village.
Also totally fair. Circling back, because that's not why we're here. Circling back to the movie itself, it was very much like, I can't remember if he did horror before this or if it was just the two back-to-back horrors, but it really cemented Devon Sawa as a Scream King, essentially. I'm just going to call it what it is. You have your Scream Queens like Nev Campbell and Jamie Lee Curtis, but I definitely would argue that like Devon Sawa is a Scream King. Kyle Gallner, who was in Nightmare on Elm Street and The Haunting in Connecticut and like a bunch of other scary things. Also Scream, the most recent Scream. But I would say he's also a Scream King. So like the final guy in a horror movie. Not like the love interest. I'm talking about if the main character is a dude, the final guy.
Yeah, I feel like this was his first one. I have listened to many a Devon Sawa interview, and he's talking about getting this role and how like one of his favorite movies is Evil Dead 2, which is just like
incredible.
Bruce Campbell getting attacked by his hand, but he and his friends would goof around and like do the hand like trying to kill you stuff. And so when he went into the audition, because like auditions are uncomfortable. You're usually like just in a room with some people staring at you, not really saying anything, and you just have to go. So doing this very silly like he just like told himself, it's just like with your friends,
just go for it,
just give her, yeah, just go for it,
just give her.
He did a great job.
Yeah, the hand being possessed was part of it,
because the whole thing was like idle hands or the devil's plaything.
And then he cuts the hand off, and Vivica A. Fox's character is just like, are you kidding me? You fucking let that thing loose?
And he's like, well, I know that now.
And he like microwaves it so it looks all gnarly.
It's so gross. I love that scene because he's like, yeah, burn. And then as it goes, it's like spurting out of the skin like blood, and it's so gross. And you just see his face like look horrified and just, ew.
Which is a totally natural reaction because microwaves cook things from the inside out. So the inside pressure of the hand would be higher and things would, they would have to come. It's super gross. Sorry if you're squeamish, but it is, it's super gross. There's a lot of like body horror things and regular like gory horror things, but they paint it in such a way that like you can laugh at it because yeah. It's horrifying, but also like it's a ceiling fan and a microwave and an electric turkey carver.
Oh. A knitting needle through an ear.
Oh, no, no, no. Oh, yeah.
It just gag reflex. That's all that is.
Like,
but his comedic, like, everything in that movie. Like, I don't know if I've ever seen him do that, like, even since.
Right, the slapstick.
But he just absolutely goes for it. And, like, that must have been the most physically painful movie for him to make. Because he's all, like, all over the place. And also, it's, like, hand. My partner pointed that out. Like, his hand must have hurt so much after shooting. Because it's always, like, tense and, like, slightly contorted and stiff. And, like, oh, his poor body. But yeah, just so impressed with him in that. Very funny. That's hard to do.
It's awesome. It's just, it's so funny. And like, it shows the man's range. He can be funny. He can be heartfelt. In our next bit of subject, he'll show that he can be like an action hero sort of situation. Also, in terms of reuniting with co-stars, I would fucking love to see him in a movie with Elden Hansen and Seth Green again, because their chemistry is amazing.
I think one of the anniversaries, the three of them did like a Q&A. Yeah, I think it was just the guys, but like Devon Sawa was super psyched to see them and stuff. And it was very cute. Yeah, there's an episode of Bunny Ears. It's Macaulay Culkin's podcast. I don't know if he does it anymore, but he had Breckenmeyer and Seth Green on.
Oh gosh.
They have an episode where they talk about Seth Green's directorial debut or something okay. like that. And in that conversation, Devon Sawa comes up because Macaulay Culkin thinks it's really funny to say, I'm Devon Sawa, because they were both like child actors and blonde and blue-eyed at the same time.
No, I can totally see it.
Yeah, and people are like, why Devon Sawa? And he's like, blonde, blue-eyed child actors. Like, that's literally the whole thought that went into that. And he's made shirts and had like a faux online feud with Devon Sawa, eventually leading to him being on the podcast.
Aww.
But they definitely talk about getting the Idle Hands role and how like everybody auditioned for it, but he just like went for it. And
he went full Bruce Campbell, which I love, because eventually he was in Black Christmas with Bruce Campbell.
And he has said that his character in that movie is basically what he pictured Anton being when he is older, like not really getting any better, like the same character narrative went into it, like just this guy who like coasts and is like pretty cute.
Look, if I had a really traumatic experience where the devil possessed my hand, I think I would call it a license to coast for the rest of my freaking life.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if like my two best friends like were dead, I'd be like traumatized.
I always feel that at the end, like his parents are dead, his two best friends are dead, they like come back as his guardian angels but then like leave the hospital room, and I think there's like the hand has written like I'll be back, or like wrote something on the ceiling, and Anton starts screaming and all they do is go, you're right, Anton does scream like a girl. And then that's the end of the movie.
Right.
But every time we finish it, I'm like, okay, so he got the girl, shared a trauma response. His parents are dead and his best friends are dead, though. So I feel like maybe he doesn't have to go back to school for graduation. That he would have graduated.
That's the thing about horror movies. Because like when you're like, yeah, they survived. And I'm like, oh, but like, look at Halloween and Jamie Lee Curtis in the new Halloween films. That's probably a really accurate reflection of how it would be for a final survivor. Or the book Final Girl Support Group by Grady Hendrix.
I have that on my list of things to read. I need to buy it first, though.
I can mail you my copy, maybe, if you wanted.
I have a present for you. I haven't found the right box for it yet, though. It's too big or too small.
That's fair. Alrighty, so
before we move on, I just want to say the director of Idle Hands, Rod Flender.
What a great name. So fun to say.
He's done like a lot of TV stuff, but he wrote for the Scream TV show, which I loved.
Oh my god, you're like the only other person I know besides my husband who even knows what that is.
I loved it so much, and I'm still bitter about how they left it, but that's a whole bottle of emotions.
I wish that people could see the face that I was making. Because like, okay, one of my favorite bits is I think it's Noah who's like, that premise would never work for a TV show. Like it was actively taking the piss out of itself the whole time. And I was like, this is incredible. Like it shouldn't work, but it does.
And they just pulled the rug out from fans. It was very sudden and emotional.
I was so invested. Oh my god. Like when season 2 came out, I was like, fuck yeah!
Yeah.
Because I was like, you're hitting all my nostalgia buttons, but you're doing cool new stuff with this, including podcasts.
Even just the mask. They changed it, and that was a good choice for them. And they're like, it's fine. We're not the movies. I'm like, it is fine. You aren't the movies.
Speaking of Ghostface, I still do want that, like, no, you hang up. Super cute. Like,
yeah. So I just thought that was cool.
Yeah. So slasher movies and horror movies were actually really quite popular around the, like, Y2K era. And I think that that probably psychologically has something to do with it being, like, a safe kind of way to express our fear when we were all afraid, like, legitimately afraid that the world was going to end at the turn of the millennium, or that all computers were going to blow up and banking was going to collapse. Like, people worked really, really hard to keep that kind of thing from happening because computers were not prepared for the whole Y2K thing. It was computers were not prepared for the year, which was only 2 digits, to switch to 00. And so there were a lot of really hardworking like computer engineers and people all around the world who busted their asses to prevent anything bad from happening and allowed for life to carry on as normal.
Yeah, I think right after it was like, oh, Y2K wasn't a thing because it didn't happen. And it's like you're saying, it's like it didn't happen because a lot of people worked very hard to make sure it didn't happen.
My father-in-law was actually one of those people. He was working, he had like learned computer coding and stuff, and he was working in England at the time, and that was one of the projects he worked on, was making sure that certain things didn't shut down because of that little weird computer thing they weren't prepared for. But yeah, I think it was like a healthy expression, a way to feel afraid and still feel safe when there was uncertainty in the world.
There's this whole section of horror that I always have a hard time grouping into other things because it's very specifically of that era, like urban legends.
Oh my god,
you did last summer.
We had so many.
Yeah, absolutely. There were a lot.
But there's like 3 Scream movies, I Know What You Did Last Summer, I Still Know What You Did Last Summer, Urban Legends, Valentine with David Boreanaz.
Oh my goodness, I forgot about that.
That's a deep cut there for you. There were also tons of like off-brand urban legends-y sorts of ones, plus the Final Destination series.
Yeah, I've only seen the first one.
And that's okay, because no one needs to be traumatized by the fucking opening sequence of the second Final Destination film.
Is that the tree one?
Yep.
The log. I've seen that and I can't drive behind
a logging truck.
No.
So before we get into the actual discussion of Final Destination, the film, millennials as a generation are all traumatized by the opening sequence of Final Destination 2, which is, trigger warning, I'm going to talk about car accidents. It is a giant car accident on a highway where the whole entire accident begins because the chains break on a logging truck. If you have never seen a logging truck in your life, Google it. It's just like a truck that is packed with logs that are only held in with like four prongs and some chains.
If you grew up on Vancouver Island like we did, they're a big part of life. Upsettingly so.
They're always around, or the Pacific Northwest anywhere, I guess I would argue. But anyways, the chains break, the logs spill everywhere, they're going through people's windows, their crash cars are crashing into other cars. And basically the premise is, this is the vision that the girl has at the beginning of Final Destination 2, that we are all now fucked up by. P.S. My high school football team was in that film, in that sequence. They were in the school bus cheering that goes by that car. So she avoids getting in the accident. But in the first Final Destination film, which Devin Sawa was the star of, his vision is that his school's trip to Paris begins and ends very shortly in tragedy when the plane itself has like a malfunction or whatever and crashes. Trigger warning, plane crashes. Probably should put that at the front of this. It's not great. It would not have been made after 2001. It would only be made prior to that.
I just rewatched it for the first time in years, and the whole movie, I'm like, this is definitely a pre-9/11 one. Like, with him having that whole reaction and then the plane like literally blowing up in the air before going down, he would just have been disappeared.
Yeah.
We would have never seen him again. And those cops, they think he's a mixed up, confused boy, like, even if he's doing all of that, like, it, there are moments where I'm like, I think these cops actually care about him. It's because he's a white middle class boy.
Yeah, he's a cis hetero white dude.
Those families are very well off.
Yeah.
My like big the teacher where her house kills her.
Yeah.
Just completely messed with me for so long. And it's like, well, I unplugged that. Did you unplug it? What if it plugged itself back in? And like stupid things like that.
We as millennials have trauma because of these films. But yeah, so he gets pulled off the plane. A bunch of other people in the class get pulled off the plane. But the whole premise of the film is they were all fated to die in this accident. And so fate is out of whack. Death is out of whack. And one by one, death picks them off in a series of increasingly weird ways. And every time they dodge it, it goes to the next person in the chain.
Like a very young Sean William Scott, who gets horribly killed out of turn by something flying off of a train or something like that. And it just like sort of cuts his
bus.
No, the guy who's like, you don't control when I die, gonna like stop on the tracks.
Right.
And then they get him out. They saved him. And Sean William Scott is like, I'm getting out of here. Like, this is crazy. Not gonna be anywhere near you. And then he like turns and part of the car that was left on the tracks like shoots up and just like cuts his face. It's not even his whole head. It's like the top of his head off. And I was just like,
the same thing happens in the movie Ghost Ship, which is another Y2K sort of horror movie. There's a whole sequence where a bunch of people get killed. Like, it's a really, people call it, I mean, it's not the best movie ever, but it has some really cool, interesting plot things and interesting, like, death things. Like, the whole opening sequence, a guy wire breaks and takes off the top of a dude's head, almost exactly like that. See, we can just casually talk about these things because we're, like, so traumatized.
Yeah.
But it's also so interesting to see a Sean William Scott, who I personally love.
Yeah.
In other roles besides American Pie, which is another film that would never, ever, ever get made, not around that time. That would never happen today.
Yeah, I think they throw around Y2K a lot, and I guess that means 96 or 7 to like 2003. And though I understand the reasoning behind that, there was this excitement in the Y2K era that was very abruptly killed by 9/11. So though I understand trends and everything from then, I wouldn't really classify anything anything after 9/11 as Y2K, but
it's fair. And it was very much the whole Y2K period and the early aughts were very, very much, I don't know if it's the same today, because like streaming changed everything. Music is totally different now. How people access music is totally different now. Like we would go, we're old-ish. We would go to like actual CD stores and that's how we discover new music, or we would watch like Much Music. And sometimes even like Much Music in Canada would have these segments with this guy named Rick the Temp in the afternoons on Much On Demand, where they would have like, here's the new movie coming out. It was like a press thing for them to do like Entertainment Tonight and all of these things. So sometimes we would find out about like new movies coming out by watching this like teen media, or by watching like shows like The Hit List or whatever. They would have segments that was on YTV. Shout out to The Hit List. Shout out to YTV.
YTV's great. At least it was in the 90s. I haven't watched it since. So.
Yeah, I actually did like a whole nostalgia episode with the other podcast that I do sometimes where we talked about YTV. Which was like really fun for me because I fucking love YTV so much. But that's where we learned about a lot of these things, or like coming attractions, or like Movie Surfers on Family Channel would talk about new like Disney movies that were coming out. Like it felt like the whole era was very geared to teenagers and tweens and getting our asses into movies and getting us to watch TV shows and getting us to go to music stores and make people like Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera just fucking blow up. Spice Girls, Spice of Your Life turning 25. Spice World? Spice World. Yeah, I don't want to think about it. But anyways, so we were kind of in this bubble of like having so much content specifically made for us. And maybe that's how all teenagers feel. But it felt like even at the like box office, like it was so dominated by like teen aimed movies. It was crazy. Yeah.
And like, I think we've touched upon it previously of how like at the time it felt like we had access to everything. Because just like a couple decades earlier, you could get music in like one format and movies were in theaters.
Right.
That was it. But we had like home video and like 5 different ways to listen to music, all this kind of stuff. But at the same time, it was still like the 90s or the early aughts. And there was a very like, in comparison to now, a big limit to how much you could access. And so when we fell in love with something, we fell in love with it. And we sort of sat with that until like the next thing came out, which wasn't like the next day or the next week. It was the next year or 3.
Yeah. And it was also like who was bankable as a star. Like there were, I don't know if there are teen heartthrobs because I'm not a teenager. Teenagers, are there teen heartthrobs now? Like, do you have actors that are everywhere that you're like, wow? Or is it just Timothée Chalamet? Timothée Chalamet and Tom Holland? Like, is that all you have?
Oh, did I say earlier? Timothée Chalamet? Shimmy-yaw, shimmy-yay. He is the director of Idle Hands' nephew.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, random.
So weird and random. Connecting it all back. 6 degrees of Devon Sawa.
Oh, and like the iconic like leading ladies of the 90s for those like cool teen girls, Allie Larder.
Mm-hmm.
She did some stuff like on TV before Final Destination.
She was in Varsity Blues with James Vanderbeek. She was one of the girls. Her and Amy Smart were in Varsity Blues. Amy Smart was the cheerleader and Allie Larder was like the misfit.
Is that the one with Paul Walker?
No, Varsity Blues is James Vanderbeek. It's the famous like, I don't want your laugh. And he's like, it's like a football movie.
But what the guy, the quarterback who gets injured because his coach keeps pushing him through his injury.
Oh.
And then at the end, the main character of the movie's like, doing the point at the coach.
Oh.
Maybe a different.
No. That is Varsity Blues, but I don't remember if it was Paul Walker or not.
Okay. I feel like it was Paul Walker.
Who is also huge.
Not the greatest actor, but I do love him.
Yeah. Pretty sure that I cannot listen to that song from The Fast and the Furious without getting choked up.
I sobbed. In the theater.
Right?
That movie.
I had like a breakdown and I was like, what is happening to me emotionally right now?
One of his best friends and like his brother and some other friends saying goodbye to him over like 5 to 10 minutes at the end of a movie. And I was sitting there sobbing and I looked at Scott. I'm like, what is happening right now?
I'm like, it's a movie about cars. They're heisting.
It's a bro film. They're going to go to space one day. Why am I crying?
I have goosebumps right now just thinking about that moment.
Oh, another 90s lady, Jordana Brewster.
Oh, The Faculty. Shit. Oh. Yes. I'm going to say it. I'm going to put it right out there. The Faculty is an extremely bisexual film.
Yeah.
There is something for everybody. What do you like? Do you like jocks? Do you like weirdos? They've got it all.
That movie, Jordana Brewster was saying, like, working on that movie, they thought this was going to be, like, the next huge thing. And then she did, like, this cute little car movie that they thought, like, some people would watch. And then looking back on it, The Faculty is a cult classic with many loving fans, but Fast and Furious has become a, like, franchise sensation. Like, it's just insane.
Which I think is very much in part of, like, Vin Diesel and how much he loves that movie.
Yeah.
Like, he just loves making them.
Yeah.
Vin Diesel is a very, from what I understand, a very passionate dude. Like, he made a movie about, what was it called? The Witch Hunter or something? The Last Witch Hunter?
Yeah, because he's also a really big nerd.
Huge nerd.
Like, D&D style nerd.
Pitch Black came out around this time also.
So good.
But, like, we had so many horror films, so many different kinds of horror films. We had thriller horror, we had gore horror, we had sci-fi horror. Like, we had so much to choose from. And Final Destination, I feel like, really has a concept that completely set it apart from all those other films, because there was nothing like that, where this guy has a premonition and they have to basically run from death, which is like death and taxes are the two inescapable facts of life, right?
Yeah. And like, it's like the end of the movie, spoilers, when they find out that they didn't escape death and it just looped around and started through the list again. Like, you can't escape death.
No.
Even if it's this weird, not visible force that makes your sink overflow and throws a wire around something.
Kerr Smith, who is in this, who is one of the three finals, was also in Dawson's Creek with James Vanderbeek and Katie Holmes.
I don't know Dawson's Creek. I just missed that show.
Jackson.
Oh, I do love Josh Jackson.
Who doesn't love Katie Holmes, Jackson? But,
oh, I always forget that Michelle Williams was on that show too.
Right? So many people were on that show. It was crazy. It's jam-packed.
I think Allie Larder was on an episode or two of it.
Oh, everybody who was everybody was on that show, even as guest stars.
Yeah, I think my friend Dana, we watched like two episodes together because she loved that show. And I was like, I don't know who anyone is.
It also had the like classic WB iconic theme song, because like that one had one, Gilmore Girls had one, Smallville fucking had, like, I was obsessed with Smallville. I was obsessed.
I also missed that one.
That's totally fine. I have the whole entire series basically on DVD if you ever want me to bring it out sometime when I come visit. But I love Tom Welling, and I just love that Tom Welling is having a resurgence and that they paired him with Brendan Fraser, who we also love, in a TV series. I'm like, this is everything that I didn't know that I wanted. This is fantastic. But that is not why we're here.
Smallville, Rosenbaum.
Yes, Michael Rosenbaum.
Was in Urban Legends.
Yes.
And there are two moments in Idle Hands that made me think of Urban Legends. One, when it's written on the ceiling, like, I'm under the bed, gave me like Urban Legends vibes. But later when he puts the hand in the microwave, I'm like, oh no, that happens to Lex Luthor's dog in Urban Legends. It's horrifying.
To this day, when I am alone, if I am taking my car somewhere, like when I used to go to dance classes, and I would have my car parked and I would come out of the class and it would be dark, I still check the fucking back seat because of Urban Legends.
I was saying to my kid, who's very small and probably didn't know what I was talking about, but I was like, yes. And then mommy locks the door when she gets in the car because we're in an underground park. And that's just smart. But it's also why you check the back seat first, because you don't want to lock yourself in there.
We learned a lot of survival skills from these films.
Just priming my children for the horrors of life, I guess.
Don't drive behind logging trucks. Don't ride roller coasters, which I believe is Final Destination 3. Is a roller coaster accident. Yeah, I'm like, I'm pretty sure Final Destination 3 is a roller coaster accident, and that's why I have a policy where I do not ride a roller coaster unless the roller coaster is constructed and in place all year round and fully maintained, like a Disneyland, Canada's Wonderland, or Callaway Park, which is near here. Like, if the roller coaster is up 365, cool. If it is constructed for an event, abso-fucking-lutely not. No, not for me.
I've never been on a roller coaster, just because never had the opportunity. But one day we're going to go to the Peony.
I've been fortunate enough to be able to go to Disneyland a couple of times. But I feel like Disneyland roller coasters are different than
regular. They're a little more chill.
Well, I think they're or just not necessarily focused on the thrills of it. There's a really great series on Disney Plus about Imagineering where they talk about all of this.
I love Imagineering.
And I'm obsessed. I'm obsessed with that, and I asked for the Imagineering story book for Christmas. I was like, this is my number one Christmas gift item. And he was like, noted. But they have a coaster at Disneyland that is specifically a thrill coaster. It's called the Incredicoaster. It goes fast. And I was like, no. Nope.
I'm here for the Mickey.
I'm like, I'm going to have a churro and not shit myself out of fear. Or have my heart stop. I can't ride Space Mountain. You're not supposed to ride Space Mountain if you have a heart condition. But I was like, that one is also a roller coaster meant for thrills because it's a roller coaster, but in the pitch black.
Yeah, I've heard about that. I think it was last episode. I mentioned that I had just rewatched Final Destination for the first time in ages. Mm-hmm. And then we like went off on a tangent as we do. So Tony Todd, amazing. I love Tony Todd.
The sunrise, in a dream. Please don't sue us.
Yeah.
Wrong candy. Man,
recently
Candyman.
Watched that movie is a lot.
The old one or the new one?
The old one. I'm gonna watch the new one next, but I love Tony Todd so much.
He is such a nice dude. I met him at a Comic-Con and he was so nice to my in-laws because my mother-in-law has seen every horror film ever created. You know, I loved horror movies today are not cut from the same cloth. Not cut from the same
cloth. But Tony Todd.
Yes. Tony Todd is an absolute scream king, even if many of the times he just plays like a baddie. Or when you like see him, you expect him to be a baddie. And then he's like, oh, ho, ho.
Yeah, he like shows up and is weird.
Yeah.
I love that when he just shows up and is weird. And that's what he did in Final Destination.
He's like, I just came here to be ominous and explain things to you.
Yeah, so they go to look at their friend's body and they walk into what I thought was the morgue. And their friend's body's just like out. And it's got all the wiring and everything from the embalming, because it's a horrible process, guys. But it's there, and I'm like, yeah, because they often love just leaving bodies out and not refrigerated. What the heck? And then like a moment later, Tony Todd comes in and I'm like, oh, okay, he was just in the side office. But for a while, I'm like, who leaves a half embalmed body?
He had to take a really important phone call about his next pickup.
Honestly, he was probably just eating his lunch.
Right?
In the side room.
There's a really great YouTube series. It's like a Wired YouTube series where it's like Ask a Mortician.
Oh, yes.
And that guy, like, he looks like he's from the 1950s and he talks about mortuary science.
Oh, I haven't watched.
It's super interesting. It's haunting. And I know a lot of things now about the embalming process that I didn't need to know. Which is that the human body is basically a juice box.
And all the regular juices go down a drain, everybody.
Yes.
Don't get embalmed.
It's gross. It's gross. But I'm like, why would they just let these kids into this mortuary?
Right. That's the other half. How did they come into an active embalming room?
Yeah, I'm like pretty sure like you have to have special training and like they don't let you in unless you're like family, and even then they don't let you in during the embalming process. Like you see the body like before and then you get to see them after.
No. And there's so many chemicals. Yeah, oh, those chemicals are hardcore. Like they're very dangerous for embalmers. Embalmers have a lot of health problems because of it. Even now, like you have to wear like an intense mask and all that kind of
stuff. Super PPE.
That's what happens when you're preserving a living thing. You use very bad stuff.
Formaldehyde.
Just goes in the ground. I don't know if anyone can tell. I have strong opinions about embalming. I think this is the second episode where I've gone off about it.
Like death. One of the more interesting things too that kind of ties into this movie is that like Western society doesn't really talk about death. Mm-hmm. Like post-Victorian era where death was like the hugest part of life. Yeah. And like spiritualism, I could just really get into this as a topic of research because I find it fascinating. And
yeah,
also like I saw once when I was in San Diego at like this haunted house, they had a hair wreath, which was the first time I had seen Victorian hair art to preserve your loved ones' bits and pieces.
I love it. It's disgusting.
I appreciate it. I recognize that someone put a lot of effort into it, but human hair is one of those things where I'm like, once it is cut off of my head, I would like for you to burn it. Thank you.
I had this little Altoids tin. Mm. Like it was in my stuff at my dad's, I think, and my dad found it and was like, oh, okay, and put it away. And then like I brought it home and then Scott was like, okay. And it's because it was one of those tiny little Altoids tin and it just had this little bit of hair in it. And it's my friend Claire's hair from junior high. I think there used to even be one of, like, she broke a nail.
Oh.
and the nail was in there that may have gotten lost over the years, but I'm ready to clone her. But she, sorry, I'm calling you out, sweetie. She would collect people's hair in high school. She had like a section in a trunk that was just like people's hair, because we were the normal kids in school.
I mean, if you're like living that hella weirdo life, Victorian spiritualism will come up.
Yeah.
But like, we as a society don't really discuss it. And it's pretty, here we're going to get into something heavy for a second. It's pretty sanitized. You know, we don't see the dead person usually until after they've been like cleaned up and made presentable if there's a viewing, or we just don't see them again and we only see like a picture if they've been cremated, and we don't talk about it a lot. Lots of people don't have plans for what will happen when they die, like,
and if they do, they don't write it down,
right? And so like, I think it's something that you can put in your will, but you also have like things like personal directives that say like, I want to be this or that if it's possible. But like, sometimes I think it is weird that we don't see our like loved ones, because that was a huge part of culture up until I think the industrial era and the invention of refrigeration.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that smarter and more knowledgeable people than me have talked about this before, but it is something like Final Destination brings it up, because they are surrounded by death, they are chased by death, they have no choice but to face this thing that is coming and to talk about it and to make plans for it. Granted, in this case, their plans are, how do we avoid it? How do we stop this from happening to us? How do we cheat and beat death? You know, it's more of a conversation than these people would probably have in their lifetimes, because teenagers, obviously, unless someone passes away in their lives, aren't going to even really encounter death.
Well, yeah. And they had a horrible bit of death happen in their lives, which like, talking of like seeing bodies and everything, nobody really would have gotten to see the remains from that plane crash. That's pretty harsh. Like it's a big fiery thing. And so you just like, with the funeral for it too, like they, like, how do you process something like that? And it did kind of feel like, well, we had a thing and now we're just not going to talk about it.
Right.
Because it's really sad. And that's sort of like earlier on in the film, that was sort of the tone. And then these kids just really have to accept it. And then you get into fate, death, and free will.
Mm-hmm.
All of those things tie into grief and death conversations. And you see them all going through different
stages.
Yeah. And processes, like they all react to it differently, which is just the truth with death.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know how people are going to react.
No. And like, genre films get shit on a lot because of being genre, but some of the most interesting, I would think, and most honest acting portrayals. What am I trying to say here? But like, Devin Sawa's performance is the
performance.
Right? Like, he's doing the action hero thing. He's saving people. He's chasing people. He's failing to save people and dealing with failing to save people again and again and again and again when he thought he had at the beginning of the film.
When other people are literally blaming him.
Right. It's a really great performance on his part. And that movies like this don't get enough credit for the performances that people give in them, because they're like, oh, it's just a slasher movie.
Oh, and back to his comedic stuff.
Yeah.
The moment where he locks himself in the cabin trying to hide from death before he's like, wait a minute, if death skip me, then it goes to river or water.
River.
Or
river's river? Her name. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he has to leave. But he's like very much so stressed, stretched, and a little loopy. And he's just like, and it's funny. It is.
Again, shades of Evil Dead 2.
Yes.
Because Bruce Campbell is locked in a cabin with a bunch of things that want to kill him.
So happy that he got to work with him.
Right? It's so good for him.
I love Bruce Campbell.
Go see the movies. Check out Y2K Horror. Experience. I don't know if it'll hit quite so hard because it's a different time of history.
Lots of great music.
Yeah. They sold us a bunch of soundtracks. Holy fuck.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Idle Hands literally has like a Wikipedia page for its soundtrack.
Just banger after banger after banger. Yeah. And always, you know, Devin's really putting it out there, being the man of the Y2K era. selling all them teen magazines.
With his new hair.
Yeah. So they're fighting death. Devon Sawa's being his best action hero kind of guy, doing his Bruce Campbell in the cabin situation, which if you are not aware of Evil Dead from like back in the day, and you're only aware of the Evil Dead with like Jane Levy and Shiloh Fernandez, that was like a straight up horror film.
I didn't watch it.
There is Evil Dead 1, which is made by Sam Raimi and a bunch of his friends, and then Evil Dead 2, which is essentially the same movie as Evil Dead 1, but just with like higher budget.
And less tree rape.
Trigger warning.
I just have to say that you don't want to go in that movie without knowing that there's tree rape in it, because it was awful.
Trigger warning. Some podcasts, I can't remember if it's My Favorite Murder or Morbid, that says stay out of the forest.
My Favorite Murder.
My Favorite Murder is Stay Out of the Forest, and Morbid is Fresh Air is for Dead People. Like, I don't camp for a lot of reasons, and some of them are The Evil Dead, which I know is fake. I know it's a movie. I know it is. Please don't get on my case. But I'm like, or I could stay home and only have to worry about, like, Poltergeist, Pet Cemetery, possibility of a haunting, but my house is brand new, so it's not, knock on wood, super likely.
That's good. Evil Dead 2, they, like, didn't have the rights, technically, to the first movie. Because I think they switched like production companies or something like that. And so that's why, like, at the very beginning of the movie, there's like a little sum up of how I got here. And that's them essentially rewriting the first movie. And then it starts right where the first movie ended.
The Evil Dead musical is excellent. BT Dubs. I have seen it twice.
Oh, nice.
One of the times Alan Tudyk was there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like, we're sitting there in the audience. We're not in the splatter zone because those tickets were more expensive. Splatter zone was like the first three rows where the blood from the stage sprays on you like a geyser from basically a sprinkler system above you.
Amazing.
We were in the row after the splatter zone, so we like got a little bit. But my husband looks over and he goes, that guy looks like Alan Tudyk. And I say to him, honey, that is Alan Tudyk. And we couldn't figure out why he would be where we live, despite the fact that there are like numerous film productions in the area. But like, my husband's like, we gotta go say hi. I'm like, he's at a freaking he's private citizen right now. Like, he's just, we can't bother him. And he's like, when are we ever gonna see this person again? And I'm like, that's not like, what if he's just here having a good time with his friends? And he's like, look, do you want to be the person who didn't say hello to Alan Tudyk? And I was like, no. So he pulls me over and he engages with the fellow and has like a really good conversation. And I was like, one time we met Jill State and she was super nice. And he was like, I love Jill State. We had so much fun on Firefly. And I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to go back to my seat
now. That's so funny.
But I was like, I'm not cool. I've never been cool. I will never be cool. I am a huge awkward nerd, regardless of how this sounds.
I have very few experiences with meeting celebrities. A few years ago, I was at work at a coffee shop, and Bill Nighy, not the science guy, but the amazing actor.
The, like, Love Actually, don't buy drugs, they'll give them to you for free.
Yeah, so we would, like, do our plating for the drinks and everything, and I was, like, doing a full middle twist thing, and I twist and put something there and see him, and I twist back, and then I just go, like, no chill at all. And then, like, somebody asked for a picture with him. I took a picture and then I, like, let him move on with his life or whatever. But I pushed the drink that I did not make. I put the saucer out for it, but my coworker had made it. And I pushed it toward him a little bit, being like, I hope you enjoy your coffee. And he's just like, yes, I've been here before, and walked out. And I was just like, what was that interaction even? Like, that was definitely the vibe of, like, somebody who's being nice, but I think he really just wanted to visit with his friend.
You're standing there just internally screaming, but they can see it in your eyes because your eyes are wide, and they can see, like, the tiny little you that lives inside your brain just like, ah!
Yeah, I need to leave before this young lady explodes.
Right? I'm just gonna go. Just before we actually get back to the topic at hand, my other, like, famous person story actually did happen at a comic expo, but I just kind of went for it super awkwardly. Sam Witwer, who was in Smallville,
yep,
did mocap for The Force Unleashed, was in Being Human.
He was in an episode of Dark Angel.
Everywhere. Awesome. Wonderful. Once Upon a Time, also, he was in it for a little while.
He's the voice of Darth Maul.
Yep.
Who is my favorite Star Wars character.
Kenobi!
Kenobi. The way he performs that character. I just, yes. I can't. You guys, Clone Wars, Rebels, just watch the Darth Maul episodes. If nothing else.
All of Clone Wars is so good, but yes. Clone Wars will emotionally destroy you, though. So yes. Just fair warning.
You know where it ends. If you go into that movie not knowing where it ends, like, you just... Like, what,
we all
you
know have... how this goes. Yeah.
Gee, I hope at the end of the series, everybody's okay and still friends.
That's what my husband calls the problem with prequels, is that you were like, I'm so attached, but I know how this ends.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, no, there's so often when I'm watching stuff and I'm getting like, oh, this is so happy, but I know what happens later and that's really affecting me right now. Like, how do I emotion right now?
You're like, cool, cool, cool. Most of these people will be dead. But he was just super cool. And I was excited to talk about Star Wars with him.
Oh!
I was standing there and I'm wearing like this nerdiest t-shirt I own that my husband has given me for my birthday. Because it actually like legitimately was my birthday that day. And we went to the comic expo. And that was what we used to do, right? So I'm wearing this t-shirt like a Flynn Lives Tron Legacy t-shirt. I'm full nerd. And I'm like asking like... So they're like making more Star Wars content. Like, I know you probably can't talk about, have they called you? Because like The Force Unleashed was so good. And I know it's not technically canon anymore, but he's like, if they call me, I'll show up. And I was like, that's so cool. And then I talked to him about his band. I was like, oh, are you going to make another album? And he looked at me and you can tell that it wasn't something people asked him about, because his band, he has a band called The Crash Tones. They now have two albums. The first one was Colorful of the Stereo, which came out many years ago. And I think this one was Revenge of the Crash Tones, but I'm not 100% sure because I haven't really listened to the second one. But I asked him, like, are you going to come out with new music? And he just like lit up. And I said literally the most awkward thing that you could ever say, because one of the lyrics involves the word skullfuck. And I was like, because like, I think you're kind of like a lyrical genius, because who else could work like skullfuck into a song? And then I was like, I just dropped the F-bomb in front of this famous person who clearly is okay enough with it to put it in his songs, but maybe not in like a regular one-on-one context. And he was just like, he seemed so excited. And he like, my husband for some reason mentioned that it was my birthday, so we came around the table and he gave me like a birthday hug, like a full-ass birthday hug.
He seems like a really good hugger.
Yeah, he was, because he was also like the beefiest being human version of Sam Witwer. And he gave me this hug and I nearly just expired. Right? Like, because it was so cool and he was so nice and it was so lovely. It would never happen now because COVID, but like, it was a really cool experience. And sometimes like meeting your heroes works out. But it was the only time that I have ever had a conversation with a celebrity that I think is super cool, where I was basically actually able to speak and just the dumbest shit came out of my mouth. It worked, but it was just the dumbest, most esoteric shit. So if ever there was a chance to speak to Devon Sawa, I would probably be like, remember that 20 seconds that you were in Casper? It's not the most esoteric shit that he's done, but it's definitely not the thing that he is most famous for, which is like being a teen heartthrob, being in Idle Hands, being in Final Destination.
Yeah.
And now, of course, being in Chucky, so he's back in the horror genre.
Oh, yes.
Living his yes. best Scream King life.
I would love to have the bravado when meeting him to say, it's so nice to meet you, Macaulay Culkin. But I don't think I could keep my cool enough to do it.
I feel like the sum total of any interaction that we might ever have with this person, other than that one time that he like put us on his Instagram on blast and I was like, why are you doing this? And my whole entire body shut down. Thank you very much, Mr. Sawa, for giving us a bump and being totally chill with our...
He looks at our stories sometimes.
Thanks so much for like acknowledging that we exist. But I feel like we'd be like, we're sorry, Devon Sawa.
Yeah.
Nice to meet you. We're so sorry. Bye. Like,
oh no, we're so sorry.
We're really sorry. Okay, bye. Like, it would be awkward. I would be fucking awkward. You would have to do all the talking. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think that getting back to the topic, which is Devon Sawa. So we made it back to the topic naturally, I think.
And that is why we're here.
We just like taking the scenic routes, y'all.
Yeah, thanks so much.
I think after he did Idle Hands and Final Destination, started getting like a lot of horror offers and they weren't like good.
They weren't this quality of horror.
Yeah. And so he was like in a weird place. He was a young adult. He'd been a teen heartthrob. And it was sort of the like, do I want to keep acting? And I think that's around like a little before he took his break.
Yeah.
And I love that he's like decided that he does want to act and that he's found his place in genre television and very specific movies. Like I have Hunter Hunter on my list and that movie looks intense with what's his face from Disturbing Behavior, not James Marsden.
Nick Stahl?
Yeah. Nick Stahl is also in Hunter Hunter. Computer.
Oh, I can't watch him in anything anymore, unfortunately. Oh, no. Not since fucking Sin City.
Oh God, that's right? Horrible.
Yeah. Nope. Can't.
Yeah, Scott won't watch that movie with me because of that whole storyline.
Another Jessica Alba, Josh Hartnett, very microcosm of the era.
But I do love that he's found his place in like all this weird niche stuff. And like he's still being the cute guy down at the end of the bar in Hacks.
Action hero tattoo guy.
Yeah.
In Gasoline Alley.
Getting to work with all his heroes.
Yeah. Flashback to that episode when we talk about Gasoline Alley. And then also our episode on the Wilson brothers. Rate, review, subscribe. Please. Thank you. Keep supporting us while we take this scenic route through our adolescence via the lens of Devon Sawa's career.
Yeah. Just a reminder to anyone who like listens regularly, we're going to be changing our schedule a little bit for the rest of the year. And so it's going to be every third Thursday. The next episode is not until next month on my birthday, which y'all will know now, which is a weird bit of personal information, but I love my birthday. So that's something.
When we used to go to the like the comic expo, it was always the like last weekend of April. My birthday's at the end of April. And I would be like, this whole weekend is my birthday.
Yeah.
And I'll make the rules.
Absolutely. I wear a ribbon that says birthday girl on my birthday. It is meant for children. I do not care.
One moment, please.
Corporate accounts payable, Mina speaking. Just a moment.
This is one of my prized possessions. It's the Wizard of Oz lunchbox that has like my memorabilia in it. And I'm not sure if the button is in here or not. This?
No, but that's a very cute one. Mine has a Rosetta, like I want a prize for being the best pig somewhere. I have a Lenore, the cute little dead girl lunchbox.
Yeah, I love The Wizard of Oz. I will not watch Return to Oz because I have seen The Wizard of Oz so many times and Margaret Hamilton to this day scares the shit out of me. Kudos to you, ma'am. But the Wheelers from Return to Oz.
Oh, God.
Just make my soul want to vibrate out of my body, if you understand what that is like.
Horrifying.
Like, my whole body's like, no.
And the idea that, like, you hear them first.
Nope.
And it's like a squeaky wheel, which is already a horrible sound, is like, ugh. But I do love TikTok. The mechanical man who's very, like,
British.
Very British. That's what I was trying to think of a character, but, like, he's just incredibly British and put out. But lovely. And I think that's one of the things is I always liked the sidekicks from that, like Jack, the pumpkin head man.
It had really scary villains, like in comparison to the regular Wizard of Oz. Mombi, who just changes her heads out like hats.
And she wants Dorothy's head.
And Fairuza Balk was Dorothy in that film.
Her first movie.
Yep. We love Fairuza Balk.
Started out with weird movies and she just kept going.
Yep. We will one day get to the craft because we can't not. Skeet Ulrich.
Yeah.
It's bringing it back to horror.
Actually, the poster for Idle Hands gave me craft poster vibes a lot.
Yep. It's because it has the same dark blue background with like the lightning strike.
Like people walk in towards things. Yeah.
But the like lettering was like green and modern as opposed to like gold and old school.
Yeah. You like my crystal that I have behind me? Speaking of the craft.
We were very, very shaped by this media. We always say that, but it's true. And like I said, like
it shaped us so much. And it's very strange to have been shaped so much by just like film.
And it's so hard sometimes to like explain to people who don't have that experience what that feels like. I don't know if this happens to you, but sometimes I'll say something about like a movie or whatever, and then the other person will look at me like I've grown a second head, and then I'll get what I call the hot shames, because my whole body will prickle up all spicy and hot, and the inner voice will go, oh no, this is not a normal amount to love this. Fuck.
Yeah.
Other people don't have this experience, but you get it. And hopefully the people who are listening get it.
Mm-hmm. Like when people are like, what movies have you watched more than 10 times? I'm like, so many. Is that actually the standard of a lot to you?
You're like, is 10, is that a lot?
Because I've like literally watched Princess Bride hundreds of times and Young Frankenstein, because like I would fall asleep to those movies every night for ages and just put them on like Jaws. Every single day in the summer, I would just put it on.
I was not a healthy kid at all. I had tonsillitis and strep throat all the time, pretty much constantly from the time I was 4 till the time I got my tonsils out when I was like 20. And then I was not sick anymore. But I was like sick a lot and I would just watch The Wizard of Oz and eat soup. So I've seen The Wizard of Oz probably not as much as the Oz historian on TikTok, but a lot. Wizard of Oz, Jurassic Park, Pacific Rim, Legally Blonde, Lilo and Stitch.
Oh, Lilo and Stitch.
Down with Love, which no one else has seen.
Oh, I love Down with Love.
We should do a Ewan McGregor episode and talk about Down with Love and Moulin Rouge.
We should watch like Pillow Talk, the Doris Day movie, and then talk about that with Down with Love. Mm-hmm. Ewan McGregor in that, because it's a whole character and everything. Two characters, yeah.
Two different American accents, actually.
And Renee Zellweger, come on. It's been a while since I've watched that. I love that movie so much, though.
And it also represented the rebranding of a Canadian staple chain, Le Chateau, which up until that point was like cheap dancewear. And then they partnered with the movie to release a line of clothing. And from then on, it became more of like a respectable fashion store.
Where like, if you couldn't afford nice clothes, but you needed nice clothes that you couldn't afford anyway, like still, Le Chateau.
It's true. They had a whole Down with Love micro collection, capsule collection, where they had like the 60s like tweed suit situation, little hats.
That's awesome. I'm going to have to look that up. Yeah, but the next episode will be out on the 8th of December. And as always, I don't know. Thank you for listening. Like, subscribe. That might be YouTube. Have we ever figured that out? Is that YouTube?
No, okay. So they it's rate, review, and subscribe.
Ah.
You know, if you're going to give us a review with stars, please give us 5, because everyone always says this, but it does help other people find us. And like, I think we're awesome, and I think we're fun to hang out with.
I think I would like to think so.
And I think we're pretty entertaining. I don't know that we'll ever get like a charted podcast that like Wondery is interested in poaching, but you know, we're out here, we're doing our thing. And if, you know, we'd love to connect with other people who feel the way we feel about music, movies, and the formative years of our millennial lives.
And of course, we're so sorry, Devin Sawa.
We are specifically sorry in this episode because he mentioned this himself on Twitter, but the thing he gets recognized for is Final Destination, but for the Final Destination movie, he's not even in.
Yeah. But I was behind a logging truck and took a picture and was like, what do I do? Help me, Devin Sawa.
We're sorry for placing you in the wrong Final Destination film.
But we appreciate how you just are a good sport about it.
Yeah, and we appreciate your full Bruce Campbell level commitment to the evil hand bit in Idle Hands.
Great physical comedy.
And hope that you one day reunite with Seth Green and Eldon Henson for a movie now, much like we hope that you reunite with Christina Ricci.
Can be the same movie. We have a whole idea, just didn't make it into an episode once.
Just put it all together. Meeting adjourned. Welcome to Corrections Corner. In this episode, I falsely stated that Ali Larder's character's name was River, but it was actually Clear Rivers. You heard it right.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
I thought it was like, I feel like it was more annoying than just River, because River is a perfectly normal name to me.
Right?
But no.
Clear Rivers. Thank you so much. This has been Corrections Corner. Can I Keep You is brought to you by the Devin Sawa Appreciation Society. Follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at CanIKeepYouPod. Listen, follow, and leave us a review on the Podbean app or wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, we're sorry, Devin Sawa. Oh my god, it's Casper!